Hello, my name is Elisa Aguilera. I'm a student in my history class. We're going to do this archive for hashtag Cover Your Fangs. This is an interview with Dr. Ulig. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, my name is Paul Ulig, and I'm pulling these questions over to make sure I can see them all in one place. But my name is Paul Ulig. My area of study and my professional area is mathematics. I've been teaching mathematics at St. Mary's University for 24 years. I was an undergraduate at St. Mary's in the late 80s. I started at St. Mary's in 87 and graduated in 90, got a bachelor's degree in mathematics, did my graduate work at Rice University, and then came back to St. Mary's and have been in the math department since then. While I was at St. Mary's the first time, I wanted to be a computer science major, but I got turned to the dark side, so I switched to math. And then after I got back to St. Mary's, I realized I still loved computer science, and I started a computer science degree in the year 2000, I believe it was, and finished it in 2017. It took a long time because I was teaching and raising kids and family, and I got a master's degree in computer science in 2017 from St. Mary's University also. So my hometown is Floresville, Texas. Floresville is a small town. It was much smaller when I was a kid, but it's grown a little bit. A lot of people moved from San Antonio out to that area. San Antonio was the big town that we would go to from Floresville. We had to do big shopping, and Floresville is about 30 miles. The sign says 30 miles from the south side of San Antonio to Floresville down what is Highway 181, which was the old road to Corpus Christi. So if you wanted to go to the coast, you would take that road down through there. Before I was even born, though, the Highway 37 was built, which is the new road to Corpus Christi. So still a lot of traffic, a lot more traffic now with the Eagle Ford Shale and stuff going on. Unfortunately, it's still growing. I still have a mother who lives down there on the same farm that my father raised me on. So I grew up on a farm with cattle and chickens and getting up early and building fences and long walks to the school bus in the morning in the dark. Don't know what else to add.
Thank you so much.
It's been sure.
Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about yourself. Okay, so in this interview, I'm going to ask you more about your perspective as a professor during the pandemic, how did it work, the changes and everything. So first, can you tell us how St. Mary's tried to accommodate to the situation, like how it looked like when the pandemic began?
Sure. So I'll tell you what I saw and what it felt like. And when the reality of the pandemic appeared, right? I mean, there was lots of discussions. Is it coming? How bad is it going to be? What are we going to need to do? But when the reality of us really needing to lock down in that very first round back in the spring of 2020, that happened all essentially during spring break. It was the year we didn't really have spring break because we realized what was coming. And I remember every day being in the commons and working with the folks at ATS, Jeff Schomburg and his group, and they were doing everything possible to touch faculty and to help them create a vision for how their courses were going to adapt to the new reality, which was we were going to be virtual, we were going to be operating by Zoom. We were very fortunate that they had tooled up on Zoom by that point, and were able to get a lot of us tooled up on it very quickly. They had hardware. They had the cameras. In fact, the camera I'm using for this video that's on this computer, that was one of the cameras that they provided for faculty. Microphones. Headsets. Now this headset is one from my kids for my birthday. It's a nice sound excellent headset. But I have one in my office that actually has a little microphone that comes down. I don't know what I look like. It's kind of weird. Alda did everything they could to get us the hardware we needed to be able to work. I mean, and I'm talking. This is sort of right at the beginning, right when we started, and that wasn't the end of it. But they really turned every leaf to be able to try to help people. They had a nice pile of document cameras too, because there were a lot of people who had this vision that, well, I'm still going to be I still want to be able to write things for my students and dynamically as we go. And what a lot of people imagine, well, if I can't write on the board, I'll just write on a piece of paper and I'll use a document camera as a camera to be able to capture that. So they were helping people. They were not taking their vision and enforcing it on anybody. They were helping faculty find their own vision and understand what's available and find what would work. And that was really amazing. And it felt like the folks at ATS were very strongly supported by the administration and the university in terms of, let's do what we got to do to make this work for the faculty. So, because we know they're going to make it work for students. That was the big piece there in the spring of 2020.
Okay. It's good now that you're talking a little bit about how you learn about Zoom, because the next question is, what is something that you as a professor had to learn?
So, had to learn, or found myself choosing to learn. I guess one of the big things we all had to learn is that learning is not an option. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to learn. And we all choose what we want to learn and how well we're going to learn it and what we're going to do with it. So like my colleagues who took the document cameras and worked with those, that was one approach. There were others who turned a camera and projected onto a whiteboard or a chalkboard and then still worked on a whiteboard or a chalkboard and then used the camera to sort of project that to the class. And that's certainly a very workable solution. What I ultimately did was follow suit with one of my colleagues, two of my colleagues, Mike Lukoki, Dr. Lukoki, and Kat Lemons, who were already, for various reasons, using OneNote to be able to capture their notes in class and use it as a virtual whiteboard. And I followed that suit. And so then I had to learn how to really make OneNote work. And I spent an untold number of hours that I convinced myself to enjoy, and I actually did enjoy digging through YouTube pages and instruction manuals on OneNote to be able to utilize OneNote to be able to deliver course content. And I think that was a huge benefit for myself, for my students. Everything I ever did in class was then always right there in OneNote, in what OneNote calls the shared class notebook. So any student can go back and look at anything we did there.
Okay. What would you say was the hardest part of learning how to teach students through a screen?
The screen part. There's a huge difference. And as enjoyable as it is on a one-on-one, like when we're doing FaceTime on Apple or you doing a video call with one person, when it's a classroom full of people, that's really challenging. And I understand the complaints on both sides, right? Faculty who say, well, students didn't turn their cameras on, or they had their cameras on, but they would just get up and leave the screen and go do something and be gone for a while and then come back, right? Mm-hmm. Right? There's a sense of, but the students who say, yeah, the teacher just, it was like they were just, it was like watching a TV show. They were just talking and it didn't really matter what was going on, kinds of things. And it was really, really challenging because I subscribe to the philosophy of Parker Palmer, who says that to teach is to create a space for the practice of the community of truth. And the biggest part of that is create a space. And Zoom is not a space. Right? And this is not, you and I are not in a room, although we might call it a Zoom room, and we might have breakout rooms, but you and I aren't in a room. And so had to re-envision that, and I had a lot of help from really good colleagues in philosophy like Skipper and also Father Conrad Keszkowski really helped me sort of really dig around on this idea of what is the space that I'm creating. And a big part of that space is the relationship. It's the relationship between the teacher and the student that we build that allows the teaching and learning process, that feedback loop of teaching and learning, to happen. And that was one of the big things. And when you look back in time, you kind of project things back. It's not clear whether I stumbled on it by accident and just thought, wow, that's a really good idea and I want to do that, or if I actually saw the wisdom of it. But you remember in our classes, every day at the beginning of class, and I still do this to a good extent. I'll walk around class and call a student by name, ask them, how are you doing today? Everything going all right? What's going on? And it may actually have been a little bit better than what may have happened in the classroom before, when it was everybody just kind of falls in, I run in, start doing some math, and then we all run out. Now everybody's sort of saying hi to each other. We want to sort of dot that I. It's really a beautiful thing now that we're sort of back in person. Go to class and talk to everybody in the room. There's lots of talking going on, and I don't even think about trying to stop it. I every now and then I'll interrupt it. Hey, I've got some math to tell you about. I hate to interrupt, but but it's those connections, and teaching through a screen challenged us to think about that in new ways.
Okay.
Long-winded.
Okay, for the next question, let's see the positive side here. And I wanted to ask you, as a professor, is there a thing that you have liked so far during the pandemic, or that you like that you started doing because of the pandemic?
So the pandemic was horrible in terms of its devastating effect on people and their health. But, there were some good things about what happened during the pandemic that in no way outweighed the troubles and the evils that were going on. But not having to commute to work every day.
Yeah.
I know almost everybody I talk to, they're like, yeah, but that half hour or hour each way of my life is lost in driving in difficult traffic. Another thing is the peace, right? When everything was kind of shut down, right? As bad as that was for the economy and the people, still, but there was a quiet in that. There was at least some space to find some peace with things. Now, everybody's situation could be different, And I have a lot of sympathy for parents with young kids. Like, if you had a 2-year-old and you were in lockdown with the 2-year-old for a year, well, it would be a 3-year-old at that point. That's going to be really challenging for you and the 2-year-old and 3-year-old, because they're trying to grow and be in the world and move around, and they need a lot of attention. And so that doesn't give a lot of time for that kind of space and peace. Trying to understand, as always, peace would be a luxury. But that was kind of a nice thing.
Okay. Thank you. What is something that you do now that you did not do before the pandemic?
So the pandemic with the OneNote and doing that with my classes really pushed me over the hump on being digital. Everything I do, I go to a meeting, if someone hands out papers, I hate to be rude, but I sit there with my iPad and I take pictures of them so that they're in OneNote and I don't have to carry the papers around and I give them the papers back. Being digital has made all the difference. Sitting at this computer, I can access all my notes from work on my phone, but I know when I travel, I can actually access OneDrive and OneNote from here and access all those. And I think it really makes a huge difference in my thinking about how I manage information and the like. So the digital, that the whole notion of digital ink and being paperless. Yeah.
Okay. And for the last question, is there anything you want the students to know about the professor's perspective or your personal perspective?
I'll speak to my personal perspective, although I could easily put my arms around a bunch of colleagues and they would say the same thing. We know everybody's suffering with what's happened through the pandemic this last year, and even with the trailing effects of what's happened. Right? There's a lot of students, faculty, people in our community, families that are suffering from the effects of the pandemic in terms of loss of family members, loss of jobs, and even just a loss of a sense of normalcy in their lives. President Biden was talking about that at the town hall meeting tonight that they did on CNN. That was live. He was saying, yeah, the, reasons a lot of people haven't gone back to work is because they're suffering, because they're feeling down. Right? It's code for a lot of us are depressed. Right? It's like our world has collapsed on us. We're trying to find our way again. I just want to say that for myself as a faculty member and for most of my colleagues, I know one that says definitely not. I think it's pretty much all of them. We understand everybody's really suffering with this. We want to be very supportive. But like I said in our classes when all this was going on, it's, you know, supportive, but with standards. You know, this is a calculus class. I'm going to support you in every way I can. But you still got to learn the calculus. We got to get through calculus so that you can get to Calc 2 and you can go into that engineering class or that biology class or the like. And it's that message. We love you guys, but we also have standards. And so that's part of that love. We understand everybody's hurting. Let's all step up to the plate and keep things moving. If you need help, say something. If you see somebody that needs help, say something. That was the John Lewis message during the pandemic. This is his favorite thing. If you see something, say something. Do something. That's right.
Thank you so much for the interview and for having the time to make the interview. Do you want to add anything else for the questions? Something else? The comment? Quote?
No, I just want to say I'm really, really pleased to do this, and I want to apologize for the 5,000 word transcript you're going to have to go through with everything I talk about. I just go on and on and on. It's really a pleasure to do this. I hope this assignment goes well, and I'd love to hear some about how it all went when it's all said and done.
Thank you so much.